My picture of God is just as massive, and I'm really, really, really small. And I'm really comfortable with that picture. I love having a big God that is in control of absolutely everything because it means I don't have to.
That's Dan Talentire, my guest on today's episode of Onward Upward. He's married to the wonderful Cassie. I've been part of NBM for a little over 6 years, and they're part of our 4pm service. My name's Dan, and I'm your host. Thanks so much for joining me today. You know, each week we get to hear the stories of the wonderful people who call NBM home. We get to hear their stories of how God has been transforming them from not only death to life, but also from immature to mature, from one degree of glory to the next. Right now, if it weren't for COVID, the Olympics would be happening over in Tokyo. We'd be glued to our televisions, watching gold medal performances. We'd be hearing stories of athletes who have overcome adversity. And I want to say, whether you love sport or whether you put up with sport, it's fair to say that sport has a significant place in our society, certainly in Australia, because there's a power of sport, a power to captivate the heart, the power to stand amazed at what a human body is capable of, and also to unite us and bring us together. And so that's what Dan and I are going to talk about on this episode. We're going to hear about his world as a sports journalist, as someone who works in the media section of an NRL team. And we also want to think Christianly about this wonderful gift that God has given us called sport. We want to navigate what that looks like for Dan as he seeks to love Jesus as a lover of sport. So let's get started. So Dan, we've gotten to know you a little bit. Let's find out a bit more about what you do for work.
I work for West Tigers, the rugby league team. I head up the media and communications team there. So I've got a staff of a couple of guys underneath me and girls who cover a number of different things of media and communications. It's kind of a pretty massive kind of project. But I've been with West Tigers since 2014. So I kind of started in a bit more of a like social media role and then kind of turned that into a bit more of a journalist role, and then if you just kind of hang around long enough, they make you the boss. So now I'm the boss of the media and communications team and love it.
Awesome. Now, being the boss means that you're not the coach either.
Mm.
So you're not responsible for any of the on-field performance.
No, absolutely none of that. That's just the coach. Clear. Well, not even the coach, that's the players really. Look, yeah, and that's, I mean, I'm sure we'll get to it throughout this, but that's always one of the great challenges for me is trying to separate my job from an on-field performance. Like I have no control over what they do on the field. I have plenty of control over what they say in the media and what they do or don't get up to in the media. But in terms of their actual on-field performance, I don't have much control over that. So it's a great challenge always about how do you kind of manage your job and how do you kind of assess your work separate to their performance. So we could have a really big win and actually I could have not a really good day at work because I could have dropped the ball on a couple of things and there's a few things that didn't quite happen. Conversely, we could get flogged, which happens from time to time, and I could still have a really good day at work and yet you feel really flat because you lost. Like it's this weird balance of not being able to control the product that you operate on. I kind of describe it to some people sometimes like working at McDonald's but not being able to control what a Big Mac tastes like. And that's sometimes what it feels like and that's always a challenge, but it's certainly plenty of fun working in sport, particularly if you love it like I do.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what I'm going to tap into now because we'll hear more about what work is like for you. I'm guessing you grew up loving sport. Tell us where that all started for you.
Yeah, I think probably have my dad to blame for that one. Just love sport. I can remember kind of going to a range of different sports. As a kid, I would play anything that had a ball. I was pretty kind of hand-eye coordinated, so I kind of could play most sports and feel like I was pretty good. I'm very, very competitive to the point that like if you invite me down to the park to have a kick around, it's like really fun. But if we start playing a game, like I do not want to lose. I'm sure we'll get to, I'm not necessarily always the best teammate in that regard because winning matters a lot. But other than that, like I think, yeah, I just have loved sport. I love watching it. I worked as a journalist for a long time before kind of going into West Tigers. I kind of wrote about every sport I could get my hands on. I watched pretty much every sport I could, and still do to this day, much to the dismay of certain members of my household who might not love sport as much as I do.
Well, Dan, I'm looking forward to this conversation because I happen to love sport as well. So we could easily turn this podcast into talking about the NRL, talking about I'm particularly keen on the NBA.
Mm.
You know, you're pretty familiar with all sports by the sounds of it.
It's, yeah, I can talk most sports. I actually worked at Bleacher Report as a US kind of sports website before I went to West Tigers, and I kind of worked in their breaking news team, which meant like we covered basically every sport. So whatever was kind of trending on Google, essentially, we would write about. And so like there are days working for a US company that there's sports like I've never heard of. I covered a bass fishing tournament once. Like I don't like fishing. I'm not patient. I think I've caught one fish in my life. And yet I could still tell you that Cliff Pace won the 2012 Bassmaster Classic. I think that's actually might be true. I've pulled that from the top of my head. That might be true. You could Google anybody's still listening to the podcast at this point, you could Google Dan Talentire, Cliff Pace, bass fishing, and there would be a story, I promise you, that I wrote on Cliff Pace winning a bass fishing tournament in America.
Right,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
So you had to just take me back to the Bleacher Report job because It sounds like obviously you couldn't be in America.
Yeah.
But you were just like what, at your home watching sport 24/7 and then occasionally pulling yourself away to meet a writing deadline?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. And it was like amazing. Like it was good. Like I worked US hours. So I worked, I kind of did their night shift, which worked for me because it was like my day shift. So I did about 5 a.m. to kind of 3, 4 p.m. Writing solid. So you'd write essentially while the sport was happening so that when something happened, you were there ready to write. And then things would break all throughout the day and night. So yeah, I mean, it's not quite the world at the moment, but there was, you know, 10 or 11 sports going. And I think that was then the other challenge is you'd also then have to find time to watch the actual sport to know what you're writing about as well. You just make up a lot of it. That's just a little peek behind the curtain. But you kind of still have to know what's going on, like actually what happened in this soccer game this morning that I now need to write about. Actually, why is this NBA trade rumor exciting and why do people need to know about it? So, yeah, I kind of consumed a lot of sport, you could say, in that time. Kind of had that like dream 19-year-old, 20-year-old setup of like 4 screens in a study, like 2 of them were streaming sports, 1 of them was like writing about it. Like it was awesome.
Yeah.
But it was very... Oh, it was all-consuming. Not that my current job is any less all-consuming, but it was and probably was not super sustainable. So that's why it was good to get an Australian job. But I did it for about 3 years. So I did kind of worked in their soccer team, world football, for about 12 months and then went into breaking news.
Okay. I very much hear and resonate. I think when I first found out that you had this job, Dan, I was like, oh my goodness, like that's my dream job to just be paid to watch sport and particularly American sport.
Yeah.
Have you got any other kind of, I mean, I love the bass fishing useless trivia, but surely you've got a ton of other sports trivia.
Oh, like stuff way out too much. Like I don't even know where to, like.
You're handy at a pub trivia contest.
Like, yeah, very handy at a pub trivia contest. Not handy when I get sent to the shops to buy 4 things and I can't remember what they are. So if it's useless, it's likely up in there somewhere. There's just so many random things I could pull out. Literally, and I don't know why. This is the first thing that's come to my mind is there's a Czech runner from the 1950s called Emil Zatopek. Like, and you probably didn't think this was going to get mentioned today, and neither did I, but it's all coming out now. So there was a story, he, in the one Olympics in the 50s, they called him the Czech locomotive, and he, in one Olympics in the 50s, was the first guy to do this. He won the 5,000. I think he fell over during the race and still won the 5,000. Really, actually, that's on YouTube. You can watch that. It's like this mad finish in the last lap. 2 days later, he won the 10,000. I think he lapped the entire field in the 10,000. And then 3 days after that, he won the marathon, having never run a marathon in his life.
It's truth.
So I think that's the story. Is he won the 5,000, the 10,000, the marathon in the space of 8 days, having never... He's the first guy to do that at an Olympics.
Wow.
That's, if you want more of that, you and I might start our own spin-off podcast.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah.
And there'll probably be 2 people that'll listen to it.
Yeah, just, yep. You know, and it'll be you and I, so.
Oh, so good. Okay. Now, for all our sports fans out there, I'm sure they're wondering, I've got a whole lot of questions about sport at this time.
Mm.
But hang on, just first of all, you said you work for West Tigers.
Yes.
I guess at some point you've actually got to like a team if you're going to work for them. Like, was this a team that you always grew up loving?
Yeah, I did. Okay. My dad was a massive kind of Tigers fan back in the day, so I kind of had no choice. I explain this to people. I think I actually support them less as a fan now. Like, you just, because my job doesn't stop if we win or lose. Like, I think it goes back to what I was saying before. Like, my job isn't tied to results. It's to do, this is what I get paid to do. So, like, you get really excited when they win, not because they're your team, but because you know that, you know, that night is going to be a good night of work, or more that the next 7 days are going to be really good. Whereas if you lose, you're flat because you know it's really hard and you feel for the players and you want to kind of fix it, but you can't. And then everyone proceeds to message me saying, oh, the Tigers lost. I'm like, yeah, really? I had no idea. but I think that's the harder thing, is trying to, yeah, deal with that as kind of a, an employee rather than as a fan. But they're the team I like, but I could easily do this job for another club. So
yep.
Just if anyone's, no, don't come. I'm very happy where I am.
Nice. There's obviously a lot of perks that come with any sports fan goes, oh, you know, you must rub shoulders with the players. Mm. You know, you get access to all the behind the scenes stuff. So just give us a window into maybe even if this was kind of like when you were rewinding the clock to when you first started there.
Yeah.
And I know, imagine there was a lot of excitement
in
getting into this world of seeing behind your favourite team.
Yeah, it's funny actually, like Facebook memories is really good for that. Like, you see what you posted back in like 2014 when I first started. I'm like, oh my goodness, that was really unprofessional. But like, just little things like, yeah, like it's, I mean, I get the gear, I get to travel with the team, I, you know, stay in the same hotel as them, like we have dinner together when we're travelling. That's all kind of they're the things that people find exciting. And it is exciting. Like, you do still have to pinch yourself sometimes when you're in really cool moments and you're like, oh, wow, like this is an environment that, you know, as a kid, this is what I wanted. Like, this is, you're in this moment, and they're moments that I'll never get to because I'm not a professional athlete. And I think I might have missed the boat on that kind of in terms of my career. But like, there's moments you kind of go, I remember 2 years ago we went down to Melbourne. It was around 2 and we were like massive outsiders. One of the Melbourne players was having a really big milestone. It was Billy Slater's 300th, and like Melbourne were just expected to win, and they were hammering us all game but not scoring tries. Like, they were all over us, and then we scored this try with like 2 minutes to go and won the game 10-8. It was like the biggest smash and grab job ever. But it was this huge upset and it was amazing, and everyone wrote us off and it was so good. And I can remember sitting on the bus from Amy Park back to the hotel. It was only like a 3 or 4 minute trip, but there was all this traffic so we couldn't get out. So it took like 20 minutes. And like, the atmosphere on the bus was just like, that's a feeling that you just go, wow, like this is something I remember and I'll remember forever, is, you know, those moments, because I have no control over that. The players are the ones that have to play and win, but they're pretty special feelings when you can kind of have that and feel that because you know the work that's gone into it.
Yeah, totally. Wow, to be even part of that atmosphere as well. Let me ask you, I mean, you're up close with the players. Do you, you know, hit the weights room with them as well?
No, I can't at the moment because the bubble, but even if you could, yeah, no, you definitely, I mean, it's a perk of, that's a perk. You can like work out in their weights room, but no, definitely not while they're in there. And even if I could, I would not want to, because there's nothing, like, it's really, really embarrassing if you're in the gym and like one of them just comes past to like, I don't know, do some video or something and they see you, like they'll just laugh. So yeah, it's just, well, they're professional athletes, right? Like you, yeah.
Yeah, it must be a bit of like demoralizing when you have to like move the pin, like, you know, all the way down to the bottom,
like
when it's
all
been up the top.
The way, like, yeah. I mean, they're very good at cleaning up after themselves, so there's never any weights left lying around. But like, even the fact that there are like 50 kilo dumbbells, I'm like, who the heck needs a 50 kilo dumbbell? And they just smash it several times. So yeah, no, certainly I'm always taking stuff off the top rack. Yeah.
Yep. Now, we're going to hear more about how particularly COVID has impacted sport, and I guess give us the inside view on that, because that's, I mean, look, coronavirus has affected everything, including sport. But I want to just pause on that just for a moment, Dan. I want to talk more about your own Christian journey, how you came to know Jesus. Tell us a little bit about how that happened.
I've kind of said that I always feel really lucky. I grew up in a Christian household. My mom and my stepdad were both and both are Christians. They were really good at kind of integrating church into all we did and being really hospitable and kind of lots of different things. I was always in and around church. And so for me, like when I think back to, you know, becoming a Christian, I don't have a moment. I don't have a moment that I can look back in, you know, in high school and I realized that I needed to kind of take Jesus seriously for myself. Like I actually never had that moment. I always felt like a Christian. And weirdly, as I kind of went through high school, I almost wanted this moment where I was like, oh, wow, that's what it's all about. And I never had it. And I think at the time I kind of felt like I missed out on something. I missed out on some cool come to Jesus moment. And I think yet as I became an adult, I look back and I actually realized how much of a blessing that was, that God had, you know, knit me together in my mother's womb and chosen me to be his child before I could choose him. And while I never feel like I had this moment where God, I chose God, yet I always knew and always felt that Jesus was king and that he was to be the Lord of my life. So I think I'm really lucky to never have had a moment where I didn't feel like a Christian. And I know that's probably a little different to some people's stories, but for me, I just, you know, I've been a Christian my life and that's really cool.
Yeah, beautiful. That's such a privilege, hey? And as you look back and just knowing that for all of your life, as far as you can remember, that Jesus has been there by your side. I want to ask you, what's the best thing? There's been many years that you've grown up knowing Jesus. What's the best thing about being a follower of Jesus?
Oh, for me, it has to be the assurance. I think, you know, and I think that, you know, comes back to my story that, you know, I've always felt that Jesus is the king, you know, and while that doesn't necessarily always feel like it in the day-to-day moments, there's plenty of times that I panic and freak out and feel like I'm not in control. Ultimately, God keeps reminding me that just it's okay. Like I'm massive and I'm in control of everything and it's quite okay. And there's those moments you just go, oh, okay, yep, that's right. God's in control. Jesus is king. Yep, just need to remember that. And so for me, I think that's been really, you know, that's for me the best thing is this assurance and kind of guaranteed that, yeah, I'm going to go to heaven one day. And while I don't know when that is, and then there's a million other things I don't know, I do know that. And that's okay.
Yeah. And that kind of enables you to handle sort of the ups and downs. And, you know, it's kind of what this podcast is all about. We're on an onward and upward journey with Jesus, but we know where the final destination is.
Yeah. And it doesn't always feel like you're going onwards and upwards. It feels like you sometimes go like four steps down to go five steps up. And that takes far too long to happen. But yes. It is. It's about kind of feeling that you're, you know, like we say, the best days are ahead of us, not behind us.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I want to pivot now to talking about coronavirus and sport. We've seen a lot of stuff that's been out there on the news, I guess, of, you know, leagues and competitions starting to resume, although there's lots of uncertainty, different formats in which sport's resuming. But can you take us just in terms of how it affected you personally?
Yep.
And I guess within, I guess part of that would be your work situation as well.
Yeah, trying to think back to football season started in March. So round one, coronavirus was around, but we kind of had all the fans there and everyone was still okay. There was no social distancing, none of that. Round two, the NRL made the decision that there was going to be no fans in the stadium, which was a really weird experience. But for me, I could kind of still do my job wherever I needed, go wherever I needed to in the shed, speak to players afterwards, do whatever I needed to on that front. And then after round two, so we played Sunday afternoon and then Monday night the competition got suspended and it was like, oh, okay, now what? And then we just kind of thought maybe it'd be a little while and then it kind of just kept going. So kind of all of April then the business was having to make some big decisions and like I don't know how, particularly like our CEO and our CFO, like I don't even know how they handled that time, but it was just incredible that the clarity they had around decisions with personnel, and that was difficult. You know, everyone kind of got affected. No one was kind of immune from that. So I think it was kind of well documented in the media that the players took a pretty sizable pay cut. A lot of staff were kind of stood down without pay. This was obviously before JobKeeper came in. I was lucky enough to stay on in a limited paid capacity. So my obviously really reduced hours and that kind of thing to try and keep our social and digital channels ticking over and bringing in sponsor revenue that way. And that was kind of our only real source of revenue at that point. So eventually the competition came back in May. So we kind of had round three in late May. But there's this well-documented kind of bubble that was put in place. So the players are and the immediate kind of coaching staff, the physios, the trainers are in this bubble where they can see each other, they can do whatever they want, they can train, they can play, but no one essentially is allowed to see them or be in contact with them. So that includes me, that includes the CEO. We can see them at training, but there's a giant 2-metre fence between us. We can do media interviews, but there's a 2-metre gap between us. We can try and have conversations, but there's a gap. They're not allowed into the admin building. We're not allowed into the players' building. And so that's been a bit of a challenge just around some of that, just trying to deal with how do you do your job differently when you don't have the access you normally would. Yep.
What about for the players? The players, are they can only go to their own home?
Yeah, it's pretty full on for the players. And this is the one of the things, like you feel like it's really difficult not being in the bubble. I want to be in the bubble to do my job. And yeah, then you look at what life's like in the bubble and it's just relentless. Like they can go to training, then they can go home.
That's it.
They can go and do like essential services like shopping and like food shopping and like doctors. But kind of all of that has to be logged. Essentially, they're not to, yeah, really, home, training, games, that's it.
That's it.
Every day for months and months and months. And some clubs have been far more affected, you know, like you look at, obviously, the New Zealand Warriors have been forced to kind of move out of New Zealand. Melbourne Storm are up on the Sunshine Coast. And that all looks like it's going to be pretty, you know, long term as coronavirus continues to kind of linger and, you know, kind of seeing what's happening in Victoria at the moment. So, yeah, look, it's a real sacrifice from the players, and I think it kind of seems like it's really easy and we all kind of felt like we were in lockdown, and yet, you know, we could still go out and get a coffee. But they can't do that. They can't go out and sit in a restaurant and have an hour out of their house. They can't do that. You know, they can't drop their kids. I don't know. There's so many things they can't do, and so it's a massive sacrifice on their end to get this game back up and running and kind of keep, you know, me being paid ultimately. That's if they weren't playing, that wouldn't be happening. So, it's certainly been a really adjusting, jarring period for rugby league, and it's kind of one of those things that everyone's having to do what they have to. And I probably should just say that rugby league's no different to every other sport in that regard. Like every sport's having to do things. You know, the NBA are in a bubble at Disneyland, the NHL's got a bubble going on, the AFL clubs have all kind of moved. They're up in, you know, doing things in Queensland at the moment. Like it's the A-League's got their own little things going on. Like it's every sport around the world's having to do this. The Premier League in England had these crazy restrictions. So, we're not immune in that sense, but yeah. It's still not as easy as just working from home. Yeah.
That's right, yeah. And I think even what coronavirus has kind of made us all realise is, you know, we once had this outlet of live sport where we could go to games and cheer our teams on and stuff like that. And then suddenly, for a lot of people, that got ripped away.
Mm.
And then now that it's kind of back, it's like, yeah, great. But you're just giving us a window into how that actually is also impacting the players and people on the inside of those teams as well. Which I think is kind of like the forgotten story in this as well. So helpful to have your insights on that. Dan, I guess I also want to ask you as well if – thinking back to a pre-COVID world, we all have our own perceptions of athletes, whether it's footballers or, you know, there's certainly like a high profile. They're kind of treated as celebrities. You know, feels like, you know, we scrutinize them very much based on public performance and behavior and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
I guess as someone who does know the players themselves personally, as well as someone who works in that media space, do you want to kind of comment and give us a window into maybe some things that, you know, maybe we are blind to that maybe we ought to kind of hold more graciously towards in the way that we...
That's a big question, man. Yeah, because like that's the thing. Like, this is my job as the head of media and communications. It's my phone that rings when a player stuffs up, you know, like, and that's like for anyone that's kind of followed sport, West Tigers have had a kind of, not stuff up, so just had some massive kind of high profile things in the, feels like all the time, but there's a lot of different things that have happened. And
so you control, for example, this is a window, you control their social media accounts.
But I can like, yeah, give them direction, that kind of stuff. I have the club's accounts and can do different things to help them, the players. Yeah, it's about building their own brand and that sort of stuff. But yeah, I think it's probably more like I have contacts that I can call at Instagram and Facebook to get things taken down or put up, or they're helpful, very helpful. Twitter, they're all very helpful, those guys. But there's a constant reminder that you're not in control in rugby league. And I just going back to your original question, I think there's a number of kind of points on the players, right? Like I think there is this perception that footballers are dumb and they're all meatheads and they all go out and get drunk and do dumb things. And like, yeah, the reality is, yeah, there's news stories of players doing that. And that's not okay. And regardless of whether you're working in a bank or whether you're a high-profile footballer, there's certain things you can and can't do. And, you know, they're no different in that regard. I think there's certain pressures and expectations that get put on players from such a young age that no other job has. You know, like it just, it doesn't happen. And it's until you kind of see a player dealing with that of having several bad games in a row and everyone hammering them and, you know, they're getting death threats or they're getting, their family's getting threats. Like that's just not okay. And that shouldn't be happening. You know, I think we're seeing conceptually around the world like that, particularly around the racism side of things, like things that players have to put up with is just something that everyone else doesn't experience. And that's just shocking. And so I think that's probably worth noting too. I think for me, one of the things that I think doesn't get reported enough is just how much good stuff players do. And they do it because they don't, and they do it, it doesn't get out because they don't want people to find out about it. You know, we have players all the time. They can't obviously at the moment because of COVID, but, you know, I can think of several players that would just visit hospitals last year and would just visit them on their way home and see sick kids and spend time with them. Yep. Now, no media is going to report that because, you know, A, it's not out there. And
this
I think,
is purely off their own bat. This is not like a staged media thing.
Sometimes the media gets a bit of a hard rap, the public media around, you know, oh, why don't you report these stories? Like, well, they don't know, so it's not their fault. But players do that all the time. You know, we have players that go in for surgeries and have operations done because it's a very contact sport. And yet when they're in there, they're spending time with kids, you know, they're you know, doing different charity work. There's a range of different things they do. And there's a million requests that come in that they can never meet. That's the other thing is there's always someone to help. And I think they do what they can to really try and play their part in that because they understand that their role is to, as, you know, athletes, is to, A, play sport, but they provide a hope to people and that's both on the field and off it. I could probably keep talking about this for another 10 minutes, but yeah,
that's good.
I think they get a hard rap sometimes and it's hard because that's my job is to stand up for them too. Like I'm well aware of that. But I do think there's so much that happens in rugby league that doesn't get seen, like any job, and that the players are under a different pressure that is just in, it just doesn't compare to other jobs.
Yeah.
I feel under pressure all the time in my job and I am. I'm sure that people are listening are under pressure in their jobs too, and whether it's not their jobs or kids or mortgages or whatever it is, like everyone's under pressure. I just think footballers have a really unique pressure.
Yeah, that's right.
And whether that's harder or not harder than other jobs is neither here nor there. Yeah. It's just it's a different pressure.
That's right. And it's easy for us to kind of be the armchair sports fan and go, I'm expecting you to entertain me. You should have this perfect life or you should be able to do this. And I think we just project unhelpful expectations upon our athletes.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when someone once told me, it's like, did you ever use a comma instead of a parenthesis in an email? I'm like, yeah, all the time. Well, that's just a player missing a tackle. Like, that's what it is. You made an error at work. They made an error on the field. It's just that their error got broadcast to several million people and it affected people in a way that, you know, somehow seems to matter so much to them that they then feel the need to give them a death threat. Like, it's just no different than if you emailed, you know, Jan from IT to come and help you at 10, but then you're not at your desk at 10. Like, it's just a mistake. But, you know, you double book the conference room. Like, I don't know, there's all these things that happen. But, you know, if someone knocks on or they miss a tackle or they miss a conversion or, you know, there's, you know.
You're helping us see.
It's trying to just put it all in comparison.
Yeah, that's right. Related to that, I want to ask now, you've had obviously interactions with the players and the coaches. You're a Christian. How do you navigate that? How do you seek to, I guess, be a witness for Jesus in that environment?
I probably just need to start this off by saying that I feel like it's something I've gotten better at, but I'm certainly by no means great at it. I actually think it started to change. We had a player come into our club at the start of the 2016 season, and he was a really outspoken, devout Christian who lived it in every day, wants to be a pastor when he finishes playing football, and just started talking about Jesus. He would write it on his arm when he played. He would talk about it. He'd post Bible verses all the time. He'd be comfortable enough to share it. And for me, that kind of became me also, gave me a bit of a confidence to talk more about Jesus, A, with him, but B, with other people that I knew were Christians. And, you know, we've started to have some more conversations with people around that, whether that's staff or players, just encouraging them. I think it's given me a confidence to be a bit more honest in my faith. You know, I think high-pressure situations emphasise sin a lot more. So I think for me that's always been a bit of a challenge around the way I speak to people, my language, you know, kind of the typical things that you think about football, is it's a really intense situation. And so when you're under pressure, sin kind of gets intensified. And so I think that's always been a challenge, but got a bit more of a confidence to be a bit, you know, more confident in my faith and where I sit with that, and kind of being a bit more outspoken on things and for Jesus where I need to.
Great. That's excellent. And I love how you're seeking to put into practice that verse from 1 Peter 3:15, which talks about always being prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give a reason for the hope that you have, and recognizing that, hey, our football players are in need of the gospel. It's great to hear that there are people on the inside there who love Jesus and want to make him known. So great to hear that you're seeking to do your part there in terms of making Jesus look good to that community of people around you. Tell us, as another extension of how your Christianity and your love for Jesus intersects with sport. For a lot of people, they do church on Sundays, you know, they're part of a small group midweek. I can imagine for you, you know, you've got an away game, you're over in New Zealand, you know, pre-COVID, all that sort of stuff, Sunday game, that's work for you. And, you know, whether it's sports journalism or whether it's someone doing shift work on a Sunday, how do you seek to navigate all those sort of key things that are part of your own faith in light of your work situation?
Yeah. As a kid, can remember when games got put on a Sunday, my stepdad was like, no, you can't play, you've got church. And as an eight-year-old, I'd be like, what? I've got soccer on, I have to go to soccer. Like, church will be there next week. And I think that set a really good model for me as I became an adult to go, oh yeah, actually what he was doing there was saying church needs to be important all the time, no matter what you've got on in life. Because Jesus needs to be important all the time, no matter what you've got on in life. And so for me, as I've kind of had to work Sundays, obviously we have games on Sundays, like you say, or we're traveling or there's things that come up, and probably on that, it's probably not just Sundays too. Like there's things that come up Tuesday nights when we're trying to, you know, meet with people to read the Bible, or things come up during the week. That's always been a real challenge, is kind of how do you navigate giving a lot of hours to work and also making sure that church is a priority. Because I think that's hard. People just think you work Sundays because the game's on Sundays. Like, no, I kind of worked Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday as well, all day, every day. So I think that's always a challenge. For me, I think the biggest thing is I've tried to just be really proactive in what I do. While there's a lot that happens in sport that you just have to react to, at the same time, I know when we're playing. I know what the draw is. I know next Sunday we play at 4 p.m. So therefore, I need to make sure that if I've got time, I need to get to the ground at, you know, 12 or whatever, then I've got time to get to church in the morning. If I don't have that, I need to make sure that on Monday when I might be at work, I need to make sure that I'm actually carving out half an hour to actually listen back to the sermon and what was talked about. You know, if I'm missing Bible study, I need to make sure that I'm touching base with the people that were there, because I need to make sure that I'm staying in community. I think I've had to learn to be really proactive on that. I probably need to caveat there and say I'm still wrestling through that. I'm still not sure if working Sundays and putting work above church in just the raw sense of it is the right answer. And I don't know on that. And I'm actually okay that I don't know. Like, that's still something God's teaching me on. But I think what I am learning and what I am feeling really encouraged on is making sure that I'm putting Jesus as a priority. It's not that work and Jesus need to be separate. It's just that, you know, I'm at work on a Sunday for this game, and so I need to make sure that whatever I'm doing, I'm working at it with all my heart as if working for the Lord, and then being okay to turn around and say that, yeah, I miss church, but I listen to the sermon on the way home, or I, you know, listen to the podcast the next morning on the way to work, or I chatted with my wife who was at church about what church was like, you know, what did we talk about, you know, I found out what the passage was beforehand and read it, you know, like all these things. I just need to make sure that I'm being proactive on them.
Absolutely. And I love how you are wanting to, you know, make the most of those opportunities that you have that, yeah, sure, I might not be able to physically gather, but you're committed to meeting with your small group. I mean, you're part of the music team, and I know that there's weeks where, you know, if there's no game and you're at church, then yeah, you put your hand up and you say, hey, I'm available to play keys.
Yeah, music team's very patient with my block out dates. Like, I block out several months at times, but they're very patient with my constantly changing schedule. Just need to give them a little bit of love there, because yeah, yeah. I certainly don't mind a bit of a late dropout sometimes, just a little peek behind the curtain. Yeah.
Yeah, but I love the heart behind it, Dan. I think that speaks well. I mean, because it's very easy to kind of just go, oh, it's too hard, put your hands up and, you know, I'll go a week without or whatever. But you seek to actually make the most of it. And, you know, one of the, I guess, blessings of having MBM online at the moment is that that's something that you've been doing for a while, but I guess others can now benefit from as well, for whatever reason, whether that's sickness, whether that's shift work, all those sorts of things. So, yeah, it's an encouragement to hear that you're wanting to do that and have been doing that for a lot longer than the rest of us as we've transitioned to online church. And one of the benefits of doing online church has been, yeah, singing. So, Dan, do you want to share with us one particular song that we've been singing online that has particularly resonated with you?
I think for me, one of the big ones that I always love, and I think Hillsong actually brought out around their Easter service, and it's an awesome Easter song, is Grace to Grace. As a Christian, like, and one that's always felt like a Christian, I think grace is something like I never had that heavy moment as a kid when I was like, whoa, I am really sinful. And so I actually kind of, again, like going back to what I said at the start, almost felt like I missed out a little bit there, that I had this, Jesus has forgiven me for so much, because I felt like I was this really awesome Christian kid. And yet then as I became an adult, you start to realize you're actually a pretty terrible person sometimes and really sinful, and what you do hurts people and hurts God. And so for me to sit there and be like, actually, I am really sinful, and there's been some moments in the last couple of years that I've just felt that. And so there's a line in Grace to Grace that kind of talks about, like, where is my sin? Where is my shame? If love paid it all to have my heart, how wonderful, how glorious. And it's when you, like, for me, I think the shame thing's probably been a really big thing. I think that's probably something I've really struggled with in the last couple of years around my faith and, you know, some of the things I've been sinful in is the shame side of things, that you feel the weight of guilt, and actually then hearing that, no, like, that's gone. Like, if love paid it all to have my heart, then it's gone. And it's like, oh my goodness, it's gone. And so that's been a really cool thing. And so I love that in that song. I mean, I could have picked like 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 songs here, but
yeah, they're all good, aren't they?
For me,
yeah,
I think,
particularly.
Yeah, that's been a really big one.
Yeah, fantastic. And how about we listen to that song right now and be blessed in light of what you've encouraged us with, Dan.
That tore through hell like a rose. to have my heart. How wonderful, how glorious, my Savior's guts, victorious. My chains are gone, my debt is paid, from death to freedom. When I see that grave, I'll see Jesus, and from death to life I will sing your praise in the wonder of your grace. When I see that cross, I'll see freedom. When I see that grave, I'll see Jesus, and from death to life I will sing your praise in the wonder of your grace. When I see that cross, I'll see freedom. When I see that grave, I'll see Jesus, and from death to life I will sing your praise in the wonder of your grace. And my soul will sing your praise in the wonder of your grace. And my soul will sing your praise.
I love how each of the songs we've been singing during NBM Online have their own way of ministering to us. And that song in particular, just the beauty of God's grace upon sinners like us. Never get tired of hearing that message. Dan, you said it before we started to talk about the song, but the phrase being proactive was something that you've learnt to do. Yes, learning to do, like the rest of us. That's actually one of the things that comes up in our leadership training groups, which you've been a part of the last 12 months and are a recent graduate of.
Yes.
So reflect on that for people who either maybe haven't been a part of it, but maybe want to consider that in the future.
Yeah, I loved the leadership course for a number of different reasons. I think it did a really good job at bringing in what you'd kind of call like real world principles and actually applying them through a Christian lens. And I think that's something that I try to do a lot with different things. I listen and read a lot of different leadership things and love kind of learning more in that sense. But for me, actually being kind of able to think about it and apply it to a Christian sense was really big. I think there was, a number of different things. I mean, I think we talk about kind of the habits of highly effective people, and you kind of talk about being proactive as one of those. I think one of beginning with the end in mind. I kind of love that as a Christian to think about, okay, how am I thinking about that I'm going to heaven? What are the next, 50 million actions that has to happen before then so that I can best do that? But I've also been able to apply that to my work is, okay, if I'm beginning with the end in mind, then how do we do this week and what needs to happen today as a result? I think sport is really reactionary, kind of if you lose, your fans are grumpy. And so that kind of changes what you do. If you win, everyone's great. They all want to buy merchandise. So rawstore.com.au. But it's, you know what I mean? Like I think that's reactionary. So it's kind of trying to be proactive where you can so that you're ready to react is kind of how I've tried to approach that a little bit. So kind of think about beginning with the end in mind has been a really big one and something I've kind of really enjoyed thinking and learning more about.
Yeah, and that's the aim of the leadership group. It's not, I think a lot of people think, oh, this is about me becoming a growth group leader by the end of it. But we actually want to help and equip people in real concrete ways. And that can play out in the home. It can play out in the workplace. It can definitely play out in church life. So one other thing that came up in the leadership course actually towards the end was we do a DISC personality profile. And Dan, you were talking about how this kind of helped with you and Cass. Do you want to share with us?
Yeah, you couldn't see, but Dan actually put helped in little air quotation marks then. It was really, looking back, it was really good to do with my wife. And I think we've known for a long time that we're not very similar. I love sport. She doesn't.
What other examples are there, Dan?
Oh, look, again, this is kind of going back to that thing of have we got time for all this, but just like literally everything. Like I like having my own time. She likes having me around. I like to, you know, if I'm stressed, I want to go out for a run or I want to go play sport and she just wants to sit in front of the TV. If I want to have KFC, she wants McDonald's. I like Pepsi Max. She likes Coke. Like
Hang
literally
on, Pepsi Max.
Anything, mate. Maximum taste, zero sugar. Oh. I got to get all my sponsor plugs in. If, you know, like it's just things that you kind of just, like literally everything we could possibly think differently about, we did.
You do the cooking. She doesn't do the cooking.
I do the cooking. Yeah, she does. Yes.
You're more verbal. She's less verbal.
Far more. Yeah, I don't know if you've noticed. I can talk. Yeah, whereas she's far more nonverbal.
Yep.
You know, lots of just almost everything. It felt like that's not how I would do that. That's not how I would do that.
Yeah.
So for us, doing the disc profile was good because A, we already knew that we were very different, but B, yep. It kind of helped formalize that a little bit. But I think most importantly, it actually helped us highlight where we're weakest, the C part.
Yeah, so each of the letters stand for a personality, I guess, profile, so to speak, and the C stands for conscientious.
Yeah, and which is kind of like thinking about other people, and I hope Cassie won't mind me revealing this, but we were like both off the charts down the bottom end of that. And it was like, oh, yeah, we're actually not very good at thinking about the other person. And like, so for our marriage, that was really helpful to, again, like one of those things we probably knew, but it was helpful to then be able to, I don't know, talk about it in a bit more open way because it's, you know, not the easiest thing to just bring up with your wife that you're not very good at thinking about each other and you both want to be selfish all the time. But it was really good to be able to, you know, have that and be able to see where what we're strong in together and what we're not strong in together and how we can help each other in that regard. And I think it's allowed us to, yeah, have a bit more just transparency in our conversations and be able to bring it up in a lighthearted way. To kind of improve our marriage and improve the way we, you know, communicate and look after each other.
Yeah. It's definitely one of the highlights of the leadership group. And I think it's partly just knowing that this is the way that God has made you and being comfortable with that. It's not saying, okay, well, I've got a, I'm low in this particular area and I'm somehow less of a person because I'm not the person that I want to be. But just having that framework and that grid and then navigating it. I love how you've sought to work with Cassie and complement each other. You recognize those things and you want to move forward and you want to grow in your marriage and you're committed to doing that. So, yeah, one of the blessings of that leadership group as well. Dan, you've been, just in case people are still wondering if we're going to talk more about sport.
it's coming back.
It's coming back in.
Part two of 12.
There's been a book that's come out recently called The Good Sporting Life. I've kind of dipped into it. You've also had a bit of a skim. I guess it's particularly, it's a book that I guess is not just focused for athletes, but it does seek to think through, well, we all in some level are exposed to sport. Either we're parents of kids who play sport. Some of us watch sport. A lot of us play sport. You know, we might not be in the NRL, but we're, you know, kicking a ball around at the park or playing with a bunch of mates. Be interested to hear your thoughts of anything that particularly stood out for you as someone who is very much involved in the sports world.
Yeah, I think it was probably helpful, this book just allowed me to kind of think about a number of different things. I think it allowed me to reflect on the fact that probably goes back to what I was saying before and kind of sport and the increased pressure that that environment creates. And that's probably no different to a lot of other jobs, right, that have increased pressure. But I think in that, sport has a really wonderful way of reminding me that I'm not in control. You know, in my job, I cannot change whether we're going to win or lose this weekend. There are things I can do to be more helpful and create a really helpful environment at training and put some positive messages in the media and make sure we post really cool photos on Instagram and I don't, like send out really good emails. Like there's a range of different things I can help with. But ultimately, once the whistle starts, there's literally nothing I can do. And that's helped me to kind of also remember that I am mortal and that God is in control above everything. God doesn't always give the sporting results I want, but God gives the things that are good according to his will. And that's kind of also really just taking a bit of pressure off that sense that there are things, more and more things that I'm not in control of. And my staff might not always agree, but I think I'm getting better at being not in control of everything. And then probably another thing that I think was really cool out of that was that probably just enjoying gifts from God as Thanksgiving. Like, I think that idea comes up in 1 Timothy 4. And, you know, I need to be really thankful that I have a job that I love and a job that allows me to highlight the strengths that I have. You know, it doesn't always bring out my best qualities, but it certainly brings out good things in me. And I am really thankful for that. And I think sport's one of those things that if, you know, we apply it properly and we enjoy it for the good things it is, it's a wonderful gift from God. You know, again, my wife might not always agree, but it is a wonderful gift from God. So, yeah.
Yeah. I love that verse as well from 1 Timothy 4, I think it is, that, yeah, God has created every good thing and we receive that with thanksgiving.
Mm.
Yeah, I've been dipping in and out of the book as well. And I think one of the helpful things, I mean, there's, you realize there's a lot of sporting analogies that are there in the Bible, which really, you know, resonate, running the race, the Christian life being like a marathon.
Mm.
You know, I've run a marathon and it's pretty hard in an earthly sense just to kind of get a picture of
I've read
it's
a
like.
Story about someone who ran a marathon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about the same.
But at the same time, I think the thing that, and you know, you and I are both sports lovers, I spend a lot of time, probably my look, the thing that I'm guilty of at the moment in terms of time wasting is spending too much time on ESPN on my phone, getting the latest sports results, you know, all that sort of stuff. I mean, you probably put some of that stuff up there, Dan, but
yeah,
that's
see,
okay.
That's, yeah, I'm the person you don't like because I'm telling you, no, you should read this article. What? What's happened in this video that you need to watch and click on the ads for?
Yep. Yes. So, yeah, we'll have that discussion later offline. But in any case, that sport is not the main game. I often think it is, and I certainly get a lot of enjoyment from following sport and watching sport, but sport's not the main game. That following Jesus is actually the main game, and that's the thing that I'm to devote my energies towards. But thank you, God, for sport along the way. Dan, we're going to end with some reflections of yours on Psalms. We've been journeying through this wonderful book as a church this term. What's been a particular favourite psalm of yours or a psalm that's ministered to you recently?
I think Psalm 24 is one that stands out. I think it's probably goes back to what I, again, feel like I said at the start, was that my picture of God is just, he's massive. Like, and I'm really, really, really small. And I'm really comfortable with that picture. I love having a big God that is in control of absolutely everything because it means I don't have to. And so I really love the picture that Psalm 24 talks about. I might actually read a little bit of it if that's okay. It's only 10 verses, so I probably could read all of it, but let me just read a little bit. It says, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it, for he founded it on the seas and established it on the waters. Who may ascend the mountain of the Lord? Who may stand in his holy place? The one who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not trust in an idol or swear by a false god. They will receive the blessing from the Lord and vindication from God their Saviour. Such is the generation of those who seek him, who seek your face, God of Jacob. Lift up your hands, you gates. Be lifted up, you ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is this King of glory? The Lord strong and mighty, the Lord mighty in battle. Lift up your heads, you gates. Lift them up, you ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is he, the King of glory? The Lord Almighty, he is the King of glory. And that just is like, yep, that's my God. Like, that's where it sits for me. And I love that. I love that picture.
Yeah, that's so good. And that I love the way that Psalms puts truth on what we are experiencing or feeling or just sometimes need to be reminded of. And Psalm 24, that's a gem. Hot off the heels of Psalm 23, which we looked at last week with the Lord being our shepherd. Dan, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today. Could I ask you to close in prayer? And particularly, I don't know if there's a special prayer that you want to pray for those in the sporting world, in the sporting community that you could lead us in.
Yeah, I'd love to pray.
Thanks, mate.
Heavenly Father, we want to thank you so much for your love and your mercy, for your kindness and compassion. But most of all, we want to thank you that you're a God that is in control over everything. You're big and you're powerful, you're strong and you're mighty. And while we don't always remember it, God, we know that you are in control and you're working for the good of those who love you. And Father, as we all go about our work, whether that's in sport, in school, in a bank, whatever it is, Father, we pray that you would continue to help us to see you as a big God who's in control. As our world goes through a really turbulent time, Father, we pray and we kind of beg that we'd really feel that grace and love that you so generously provide to all who love you. And we pray that you'd help us to feel that you are in control and that you'll never kind of give us more than we can't handle, Father. So thank you so much for Jesus, for his grace and for the peace that he gives us, for allowing us to be your children and one day see you face to face in heaven. Father, until then, we pray that we'd be great servants of you, people who love and follow you in all that we do, and that we'd continue to mature to be more and more like Jesus until then. Amen.
Well, what a fascinating insight that was to have Dan take us on a behind-the-scenes tour of what it's really like to be in the sports world. As someone who loves sports, I could go on forever talking about sport with Dan. But more than a conversation about sport, I love how Dan was able to give us an insight into how he's trying to match his love for Jesus and his love for sport. I couldn't help but have a smile on my face as Dan was telling us the story of his dear wife, Cassie, and how they are both walking away from the time that they've spent together in the leadership group, seeking to grow in their marriage. And I just am so thankful for the way in which Dan is not only seeking to be a faithful worker, but also to be a faithful and a God-honoring husband as well. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of Onward Upward. Thanks so much for joining me today. And as Dan said, that sometimes that journey can feel more downward than upward. But wherever you're at with Jesus right now, we have a good God. And as Dan so beautifully reminded us, he is the one who is in control. He is the big God who knows all things and is seeking to work for our good. So keep trusting in Jesus in your onward, upward journey. Bye for now.